KHUM is freeform independent radio from Humboldt County, California. Learn more at khum.com.
30 minutes now after 2 o'clock. And we got it on KHUM, Humboldt Grown Radio Without the Rules. It is now time for Coastal Currents. Wait a second. That could have happened to literally anyone. That's not the Coastal Currents theme song. Not by any means. This is, however... There we go. Now it's time for Coastal Currents. Brought to you by wonderful folks at Kokatat, sponsoring Coastal Currents for many, many years. Thank you to Kokatat for your continued sponsorship. And a big giant thanks to Bayside Garden Supply as well for sponsoring Coastal Currents. And thank you to Delia for her tireless work week in and week out bringing us Coastal Currents. Hey, Delia.
Hey, Larry. How's it going?
It's good. Everything's good on this end. Don't worry, there's no technical problems.
I never would doubt you.
No, of course, we're pretty well-oiled machine. Well, we have a very special guest this week. Who is our very special guest?
Yeah, we really do. I'm sitting here at HSU with David Helvard, who is the executive director of Blue Frontier and author. And he is here visiting HSU right now to give a talk on one of his books. It's called The Golden Shore, and it's about California's love affair with the sea and kind of talking about how California is a model in this new administration we have, leading the way in many different things, but he can tell us more about that. And he's going to be giving a talk on this book tonight at HSU, which everyone should definitely come out and check out. But without further ado, I'll let David introduce himself and just tell us a little about yourself. Thank you so much for being here today with us.
No problem. I was just, it's no sacrifice to come up to the Humboldt Coast. It's stunning, you know, one of the wild oceans of the world. And we were just sitting here. I was slightly jealous. I was down at the Marine Lab this morning, and Delia was off the Marine Lab catching waves. like I say, the Redwood Coast here is amazing. Most people, tourists come to California and they think it's all the Southern Light. It's all those wide sandy beaches and low coastal bluffs and kind of, you know, big 1,100-mile extension of Malibu Barbie's beach house. But, of course, once you get around, you know, Point Conception, you're in the North Pacific. It's some of the wildest fetch of ocean in the world. And then as the harbor master up in Crescent City told me, you know, north of Cape Mendocino, it's not even Northern California, it's Baja, Oregon. So, you know, it's this miracle of having 1,100 miles of coastline, you know, the most populous state in the nation, almost 40 million people, the world's sixth largest economy, and yet we're living on the edge of the Pacific Ocean, covers one-third of the planet, and we're doing a pretty good job of it. I mean, we were a late maritime frontier. We did the usual thing of you know, Europeans coming in, eradicating native peoples and native wildlife and polluting and exploiting. But as a culture, we've kind of grown and turned around to where we're really seeing a revival of our coast and ocean over the last century. And I think a lot of it's what I call is the fact that every Californian has a sense of entitlement, that they understand the beach and the ocean belongs to all of us, and that we value it, and that we've come to understand that healthy oceans and healthy economies match up, that you know, it's possible to. And what I also realized is it's that engagement and also having what I call like a democracy of blue interest, because we have surfers and ports and the Navy and the fishermen and the scientists, because we have so many different contending interests that we have big family fights, but we tend to come out with good endpoints. The states and the coastal seas that are really in trouble is where one industry or special interest dominates, whether it's, you know, fishermen in New England, the politicians think they own the ocean, so there's no cod left off Cape Cod, or down when I've been in the Gulf and I was there for Katrina and then the BP spill, and it's an oil colony, and it undermines the, you know, the health and the prosperity of all the people as well as the ecosystem. It's really, California is exceptional. It's kind of facing all the cascading problems of overfishing and pollution and coastal sprawl and climate change. You really need to grow the solutions faster than the problems. And California is kind of at that scale of looking to California as a solution. You know, like I said, the sixth live well, even in our urban coast, not just our Redwood coast, which is, you know, wild and stunning. But I've been stuck in traffic on the PCH down by L.A. and looked through these multi-million-dollar box houses and seen, you know, pods of dolphin making better time than I am. And I think it's all through this series of historical developments I talk about in the book, of how we came around to be, you know, models for the greening ports movement, for the, you know, the Navy transitioning off fossil fuels for some of their vessels and aircraft, and of course the ones that are most advanced are the ones that get placed in California, because we have this odd mix of cultures, militarism and environmentalism. So, for example, at Vandenberg Air Station, when they fire missiles off, they have an agreement with the Coastal Commission not to fire their missiles towards Antarctica during seal pupping season on the Catalina, on the Channel Islands, because we value our wildlife and our habitat, and we get so much from the ocean, you know, in terms of not just recreation, but transportation, trade, you know, energy, protein, the sense of awe and wonder being part of something bigger than ourselves. And I think people up here particularly understand that. I mean, I've got two chapters in the book that I'll talk about at Bob tonight, Native Tides, which I guess I'm speaking at the Native American Center, because, mm-hmm. you know, it's sort of the first human populations in California, and they lived well. We had linguistic and tribal diversity because there was such wealth from the ocean and the near-shore environment that people didn't go through the cycles of hunger and starvation that exist in other parts of the world. And of course, just the, as I say, it's a late maritime frontier. The Northern California really developed late, and between sort of your rains and your isolation and then the creation of the Coastal Commission in the 1970s, we never saw the sprawl come up here. And so you've sort of got this incredible, you know, valuable coastal and ocean. I mean, you know, Humboldt sort of world famous for its marijuana agriculture, but it really should be world famous for the coast and wild ocean that exists here and all the potential and how we can learn and live with it. I mean, the Marine Lab's a great locale to study some of the phenomenon and ocean that's fairly well still intact.
Definitely, yeah, I agree. We're so lucky to be Californians, and especially in Humboldt. And so with this new administration, do you see California really struggling, or really just kind of becoming this like shining icon of what is possible, or we can come together and protect our coast, or which way do you see it going?
Well, I think we have to be a model. It's not just me. I mean, I listened to the governor's State of the State yesterday, and you know, you got a new Trump, you know, petro oligarchy is kind of how it's going to function. I mean, he's got a cabinet full of billionaires who are into climate denial but for offshore drilling. These are the issues we dealt with many years ago in California, and we've shown that actually addressing climate and increasing energy efficiency and going to clean energy are all benefits for the economy. You know, 150 years ago, people said that, you know, without whale oil, it was the lubricant of the machine age. If we got rid of whale oil, the economy would collapse. You know, 10,000 whalers would be out of work in New England. Well, the reality is we went from whale oil to rock oil, and the economy expanded. California's a model of how we can expand to clean energy, how we can protect our coast and ocean, and that benefits our economy. So in a State of the State, you know, Governor Brown said that California, one out of eight Americans live in California, and we're going to protect American values. We value our immigrants who come here and improve and diversify our culture and improve our economy and expand it. And we're going to, you know, protect health care for our citizens, and we're going to recognize the threat, the global threat of climate disruption, and address it through smart planning and clean energy. And I think, you know, in Washington, it may be the last straw of the, you know, of the petrochemical dinosaurs, because the reality is people like Elon Musk, they're the Henry Fords of this century. And, you know, on Saturday, millions of people marched in these women's marches against the new administration in Washington, against the misogyny and the racism that helped this man get elected. And I think that, and certainly in every part of, I mean, I was with 100,000 people in San Francisco, but I was equally impressed. protection and the restoration of California's coast and ocean, and I think it's going to bring about the restoration of this nation from a very bad turn it's just taken.
Definitely. So let's talk about Blue Frontier a little bit. Can you tell us a little background about how you got started and what exactly is Blue Frontier and what are some things that you're going to be working on now?
Sure. Blue Frontier is my nonprofit. That's a group that you can find it at bluefront.org. Basically, we sort of try and herd catfish, which is to say, my first ocean book was called Blue Frontier. Found the good spirit of environmentalism. I recycled it into a organization that works to bring together the ocean community to figure out how to be more effective in what we do. So we're having, like, one of the things we do this spring, we're going to have our sixth biennial Blue Vision Summit in D.C. It's being sponsored by us and NRDC and Oceana and the National Aquarium and Surf Rider, lots of groups, to bring local, regional, national activists together with other stakeholders, with people from the ports and the Coast Guard, and tell our elected officials, one, you work for us, and two, oceans matter. We're going to have a delegation of like 30 people, like we did before, from Colorado. We have an inland ocean movement that's growing. We have explorers and adventurers like my friend Margo Pellegrino's paddle. She read my book, 50 Ways to Save the Ocean, and she decided as a New Jersey athlete she had to up her game. So she paddled from Miami to Maine, then I convinced her to go to Seattle to San Diego, and then she's just finished a loop from New York to New Orleans through the interior. And meeting with all these watershed people and river people and native people who are fighting water quality, which is a common issue, whether you're living on a river in the Midwest or the coast of Northern California. When she was paddling down a few years ago from Seattle, her husband Carl brought the kids. He said, "I'm coming out there. We're going to meet at the Mattole." I go, "No, you're not. You can't get there from here. Meet in Fort Bragg." And she paddled in, and we went to dinner that night. He kept looking around. He says, "I can't believe this is Northern California. Where are all your cities? Where are all your people?" I said, "Well, you know, we're a late maritime frontier with a very different history. You know, they say San Francisco's Northern California. That's just demographics trumping geography. Mm-hmm. We're North Central, but, you know, we got 25 million people up to the Golden Gate Bridge in our coastal counties, and then you get north there to, you know, Marin and Sonoma, Mendocino, Humboldt, Del Norte, less than a million people, one very good congressperson to represent y'all. This is, you know, this is part of the choices we made to protect some of this wilderness. And also protecting wilderness and wildlife is going to be huge in the next few years. We're going to see attacks on the Endangered Species Act, on the Clean Water Act. And we're going to have to be the model to say, look, when you protect, you know, nature, you protect everything else. I mean, we have to protect our communities, both human and wild, and understand that our economy is a fully owned subsidiary of our environment, and that most of our environment is salt water.
Right. And so one of the first steps you can do is learn about it and go to your talk tonight and learn some more, since we're just getting a little taste of it right now in this radio segment. But
sure. So we'll be here. I mean, Humboldt State's a great school. So I guess 5:00 at the Native American Center. I hope folks do come and join us. And, you know, we're going to have a reception afterwards. So I don't want to be the only one talking. Everybody has a story to tell. And it's, very exciting but very challenging moment. I hope people come tonight. I hope they come to D.C. May 9th to 11th and to get in the face of our elected representatives, remind them that they work for us, and that that what they how they vote on the coast and ocean is going to have political consequences. And I hope that, that people in the face of a real threat to our democracy, people come together and just become engaged citizens. And it's going to be hard and scary, but that's why we have the ocean there. Every time I go out in the ocean, I come back, and every time I dive or body surf, I just feel, like, optimistic again.
Definitely. And I was telling a friend the other day, being in the ocean is the only time when I actually feel like I can meditate, really, and then you just kind of you hit the reset button. You're like, oh, yeah, this place is really special, and I really want to protect it. But so anyways, yeah, 5 tonight, News American Forum up by the BSS building, 5:00. Free?
It is free, and we'll even have some books there if you want to buy one.
Awesome, yeah, and you have a few books. We're looking at a few of them right here, so Are the Golden Shore book, and where can people find those if they don't come to
the online or your local independent bookstore? Some of my other books, 50 Ways to Save the Ocean. Rescue Warriors is about, you know, subtitled U.S. Coast Guard, America's Forgotten Heroes. You got a great active air station here in by the airport. Mm-hmm. Then you got a surf station down on mm-hmm. the Samoa Peninsula. And those guys and gals do some amazing stuff.
Yeah.
I just was very impressed with, you know, it's kind of this great combination of, you know, of patriotism, altruism, and adrenaline. And again, more, you know, just more different kinds of watermen and women who kind of get their strength out of being part of something larger than themselves, which is something like the Pacific Ocean, which covers one third of our blue marble planet.
Yeah. So is there anything that people should be really especially paying attention to right now to tell their elected representatives about?
I think the, you know, President Trump has the climate change, anthropogenic, human-enhanced climate disruption isn't real, and he says it's part of that same petroleum lie that we need more fossil fuel development. The scientists tell us we need to leave 70% of the known reserves of coal and oil in the ground and under the seabed if we're to survive the worst consequences of the disruption we're already experiencing. So I think tell your elected officials to stand firm, you know, for, I'd say the triple bottom line is we've got to link the environment, the economy, to equity. Stand firm against, you know, new offshore drilling. Be serious about transitioning off of the fossil fuel to clean energy. Promote clean energy, which brings jobs and an opportunity and will expand our economy. And also understand that, you know, it's a cascading series of crisis with our fisheries, with our marine wildlife, with our own lives. That when I was young, they said, think globally, act locally. The reality today is the threats are local, mm-hmm. national, global. We have to think and act simultaneously at the same time. And then when we get back in the water, we remember what it is we're fighting for. That, right. You know, our mother ocean, you can't abuse her. We got to defend her.
Definitely. I like that. So, again, if people want to come to the talk, it's tonight at 5 at the Native American Forum, HSU. And also, if they just want to check out more about you and Blue Frontier,
go to our website, www.bluefront.org.
Perfect. Well, I could sit here and ask you questions all day, but Larry, do you have any other questions for David?
Yeah, I do have one. Quick one. And David, thank you for coming up here to Humboldt, and thank you for your time and talking to us here on KHOM. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely. I'm so sorry I can't be down there in Ferndale. It's, you know, I've only seen it from when it was invaded by viruses and they were about to nuke it.
Well, it's gotten better since then, so maybe on your next trip you can come up. I had one question, kind of, I guess, more of a sort of a higher level question. I mean, a lot of times when environmental policies are contested, it's framed as a kind of an economic contest. In that, you know, stricter environmental regulations will cost jobs and will harm the economy in some way or another, and that's why they're opposed. And as you stated so eloquently earlier, and as econometric studies have shown frequently, that there are economic returns to maintaining a healthy environment that are a lot of times a lot greater than whatever losses there might be. And it seems like this conflict comes up over and over again. Like, that's not settled or accepted, that preserving the environment is actually economically more beneficial than continuing the way we've been. So I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that. Is it a failure of leadership or a failure of education or something entirely different?
Yeah, I think it's entirely different. I think industry basically propagandizes this idea that environmental protections cost jobs. And California is the model of reality that the environmental, high standards of environmental protection actually not only generate new jobs and generally more labor-intensive jobs like in solar and clean energy, but also attract more people. People like living in places that are not heavily polluted. I mean, one quick example is the ports of L.A. and Long Beach. It's the fifth largest port complex on the planet. 10 years ago, they couldn't expand the terminals, the different companies, shipping companies, because of lawsuits. The surrounding communities of San Pedro and Wilmington and Long Beach had high rates of childhood asthma and adult cancers, and there were lawsuits because of the air quality was so terrible coming off the ports. They hired Geraldine Knapps, not only the first woman, but the first marine biologist to run a major port of L.A. She brought the port commissions together. They passed a Clean Air Action Plan. They cleaned up the water. They reduced air pollution 70%. The lawsuits went away. The terminal then could expand again. And you know, this is a place where there's $1 billion a day of goods across those docks. Nothing was happening when it was polluted. The port economy is expanding with the cleaner air and cleaner water. This is how it works in real life. And what industry's been saying since forever is, oh, it's gonna cost too much and cost jobs. We don't have the technology to clean up. But when you make them do it, turns out it increases innovation. You know, it creates new jobs and new industrial sectors. I mean, you know, 150 years ago, people could have been saying, oh, well, if you stop hunting Leviathan, you know, if you kill off the whale oil, the lubricant in the machine age, you're going to like lay off 10,000 whalers and all the other subsidiary industries. You know, the barrel makers and the harpoon makers are going to be out of work. It's terrible. Well, we went from whale oil to rock oil, and the economy expanded tremendously. And now we found out that rock oil no longer works. It's a product liability issue. This product use is directed, you know, overheats your planet, acidifies your ocean. So it's time to, you know, coal and oil were great energy systems for the 16th and 19th century. The industries, the countries that move most rapidly into new clean renewable energy are the countries that are going to benefit economically. And unfortunately, we're way behind, you know, way behind Europe on clean offshore wind. We're way behind China on producing cheap solar and wind. And California is different. We're more like Western Europe. We're moving forward rapidly on the transition. But now we have a climate denier in chief. So we'll see who's got the better economy. I think historically it's shown that those states and those nations that have the highest level of environmental protection have the healthiest economies and best quality of life.
All right. Well, thank you. I appreciate your answer very much. Delia, do you have anything
else? Not a short answer like you asked for.
No, that was, I prefer a comprehensive answer to it, just a quick one, so I appreciate it. Delia, is there anything else before we close down this episode?
I don't have anything else, but I really encourage everyone to come out to the talk tonight. And like I said, it's going to be a talk and a discussion, so a great chance to get all of your questions answered and meet a really, really cool person that we're lucky to have here.
Awesome. So, and if you can't make it, the Golden Shore, California's love affair with the sea, is, like I say, you can go online, but better go into your local bookstore and support that and order it.
All right. Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you both very, very much. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Larry. All right. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
All right, bye.
All right. Again, that talk is tonight at the Native American Forum. It's at 5 p.m., and that's on the HSU campus. And you can just Google the author's name, David Helvarg, H-E-L-V-A-R-G, and you'll get all the information you need. All right, thanks again to our guests. And right now, some music. This is Cat Empire on K-Home.
I love you like oil coming down high.
This has been a KHUM production. For more information, check out khum.com or search K-Home in iTunes.